Welcome to SCOTUSCast, State Prisoners and Federal Habeas Petitions Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 10, 2012, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Gonzalez v. Thaler. This case presents two questions arising under the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996, or EADPA. The first is whether a judge's failure, when issuing a certificate of appealability under AEDPA, to indicate the constitutional issue that a state prisoner has raised, deprives a court of subject matter jurisdiction to hear that prisoner's habeas appeal. The second question involves how to determine when a judgment becomes final for the purposes of calculating the one-year limit that state prisoners have in which to file a federal habeas petition. In an opinion delivered by Justice Sotomayor, the court held by a vote of 8-1 that, first, a judge's failure to indicate the requisite constitutional issue raised by a state prisoner does not deprive a court of appeals of jurisdiction to hear a state prisoner's habeas appeal. And second, for a state prisoner who does not seek review in the state's highest court, judgment becomes final on the date that the time for seeking such review expires. On that basis, the court affirmed the decision of the lower court that the state prisoner's federal habeas petition was time-barred. Justice Scalia filed a dissenting opinion. To discuss the case, we have Ozan Barol, who is a visiting assistant professor at the Chicago-Kent College of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Barol.
In a docket that includes some of the hottest and most significant cases in recent Supreme Court history, Gonzalez v. Thaler appears at first blush as a dry, technical case on habeas corpus procedure. But if you dig a little deeper, you'll notice that the opinion raises important questions about federalism and respect for state law criminal processes, highlights continuing debates on the court about textualist and purposivist approaches to statutory interpretation. It resolves two circuit splits and has significant ramifications for habeas corpus practice. The opinion also underscores the Supreme Court's continuing interest in state post-conviction cases. In this podcast, I'll first explain the holding and reasoning of the court. As I go through the case, I'll also give a brief primer on pertinent habeas corpus procedures for those listeners who are not well-versed in this technical field. And I'll end the podcast with the ramifications of the decision. So let's turn to the facts and holding of the case. The petitioner in this case, Rafael Gonzalez, was convicted of murder in Texas State Court. He appealed his conviction to the Intermediate State Appellate Court, which affirmed the conviction. Gonzalez then had the option of seeking discretionary review with the highest court of criminal appeals in Texas, which is called the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals. But Gonzalez did not seek discretionary review with that court. Instead, he allowed his time for seeking discretionary review to expire. The Court of Appeals issued his mandate sometime thereafter. Gonzalez then went on to file unsuccessful petitions for state habeas relief, and he then petitioned for federal habeas review. Now, the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996, or commonly referred to as AEDPA, has various provisions that govern federal habeas procedure. Under AEDPA, Gonzalez had 1 year to file a habeas petition after his state court judgment became final. Well, the question is, when does a state court judgment become final? If Gonzalez's conviction became final when his time for seeking discretionary review before Texas's highest criminal court expired, he had blown his 1 year deadline. But if the conviction became final when the Intermediate Court of Appeals issued its mandate, then the petition would be timely. In his federal habeas petition, Gonzalez argued that the 10-year delay between his indictment and trial violated his right to a speedy trial under the Sixth Amendment. But the federal district court did not reach Gonzalez's substantive Sixth Amendment claim. Rather, the court held that Gonzalez's habeas petition was time-barred because he didn't file his petition within the 1 year limitations period, which the court held started to run when Gonzalez's time for seeking discretionary review before Texas's highest criminal court expired. After Gonzalez lost before the district court, he decided to appeal to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. Now, under AEDPA, appeals work a little differently. A losing party cannot automatically appeal to a higher court. Rather, the habeas petitioner must obtain what's called a certificate of appealability from a judge in order to appeal the district court's decision. And that certificate, according to AEDPA, may issue only if the judge determines that the petitioner has made a substantial showing of the denial of a constitutional right. So a petition that raises only a procedural error on appeal that doesn't rise to the level of a constitutional violation cannot invoke the jurisdiction of the appellate court. According to AEDPA, the certificate of appealability must also indicate the specific constitutional issue that satisfies that statutory showing. So Gonzalez applied to the Fifth Circuit for a certificate of appealability on two grounds. One, that his habeas petition was not time-barred, and two, that his Sixth Amendment right to a speedy trial was violated. A Fifth Circuit judge granted a certificate of appealability on only the procedural question of whether Gonzalez's habeas petition was timely filed. Importantly, the certificate, which was drafted by the judge, makes no mention of the substantive Sixth Amendment question. On appeal, the Fifth Circuit affirmed the district court's denial of habeas relief, holding that Gonzalez's petition was time-barred. The Fifth Circuit did not address Gonzalez's Sixth Amendment claim or discuss whether the certificate of appealability was defective. After having lost before the Fifth Circuit, Gonzalez then petitioned the United States Supreme Court for certiorari. The Supreme Court granted Gonzalez's cert petition on two questions. One, whether the Fifth Circuit had jurisdiction to hear Gonzalez's appeal, even though the certificate of appealability failed to state a constitutional issue, and two, whether Gonzalez's petition was time-barred. The circuit courts had been divided on both questions, so the court had the opportunity to kill two birds with one stone and resolve both circuit splits in one opinion. As to the first question, the court, in an 8-1 opinion by Justice Sotomayor, held that a court of appeals has jurisdiction to hear a habeas appeal even where a certificate of appealability is defective for failing to state the required constitutional issue. In its opinion, the court draws a distinction between two types of rules: jurisdictional rules on the one hand that govern a court's authority to adjudicate a case, and claim processing rules on the other hand, which do not. Now, that distinction turns out to be very important. A jurisdictional defect goes to the very authority of the court to adjudicate a case and deprives the court of the power to hear the case. Jurisdictional defects, moreover, can't be waived by the parties and can be raised at any point in the litigation. And even where no party raises them, courts are obligated to consider them sua sponte. Reasoning that drastic consequences can attach to jurisdictional defects, the court held that to create a jurisdictional rule, the Congress must speak clearly and expressly rank a restriction as jurisdictional. And absent a clear indication by Congress, the courts must treat a restriction as non-jurisdictional. In the federal habeas context, although the certificate of appealability itself is jurisdictional, the majority said, the provision mandating that the certificate indicate a constitutional issue is not jurisdictional. That specific provision did not speak in jurisdictional terms or refer in any way to the jurisdiction of the Court of Appeals. The provision's statement that the certificate shall indicate a constitutional issue meant only that the provision was mandatory but not jurisdictional. In reaching this holding, the court also underscored some fairness concerns. Gonzalez had advanced both his procedural claim and his Sixth Amendment claim in his application for a certificate of appealability. And it was a judge, not Gonzalez, that had drafted the defective certificate and neglected to include the constitutional issue that Gonzalez had properly raised. And according to the court, it would be unfair to dismiss Gonzalez's petition for a defect in the certificate that was beyond his control. Having decided that the Court of Appeals had jurisdiction to hear the case, the court then turned to the second question, which is whether Gonzalez's habeas petition was time-barred. As I mentioned before, under AEDPA, Gonzalez had 1 year from the date on which his state court conviction becomes final to file a habeas petition in federal court. The question before the Supreme Court was, if a habeas petitioner does not appeal to a state's highest court, when does the state court judgment become final? There were two possibilities. The decision could become final when the time for seeking review in the state's highest court expired, or the decision could become final when the intermediate appellate court issued its mandate. That distinction had important consequences for Gonzalez because his petition would be time-barred under the first alternative, but not under the second. The court opted for the first alternative and held that a state court decision becomes final and the one-year limitations period starts to run when the time for seeking review in the state's highest court expires. Therefore, Gonzalez was out of luck. Justice Scalia was the sole dissenter in the case. In a relatively passionate dissent for a fairly technical question, he argued that the Fifth Circuit lacked jurisdiction to decide the appeal because the certificate of appealability failed to identify the required constitutional question. According to Justice Scalia, if a document, and in this case that document was a certificate of appealability, is jurisdictional and the statute specifies the required contents of the document, a document that doesn't contain those required contents cannot provide jurisdiction to the court. Justice Scalia also noted that the defect in Gonzalez's certificate was not minor. It undermined the whole purpose of the certificate. Congress had intended the certificate of appealability to perform a gatekeeping function by limiting habeas appeals only to those cases that involved a substantial showing of a constitutional violation. But in this case, no federal judge had ever determined that Gonzalez had made that requisite showing. And without that determination, the certificate could not perform its gatekeeping function. According to Justice Scalia, the majority's interpretation therefore made a hash out of the statute. At bottom, Justice Scalia seems to believe that conditions attached to court-to-court appeals are always jurisdictional. But with the majority's opinion in this case, Justice Scalia lost that battle. Finally, I'll discuss what I see are three important ramifications of this case. First, the Supreme Court appears loath to categorize statutory requirements as jurisdictional because of what the court sees are drastic consequences that attach to jurisdictional rules. The majority in this case expressly stated the court's intention to bring some discipline to the use of the term jurisdictional. So going forward, Congress must make it crystal clear that a jurisdictional requirement is, in fact, jurisdictional. Under the reasoning of this case, the use of mandatory terms like shall or must in a statutory provision will likely not be sufficient to make a restriction jurisdictional. Second, the majority and the dissent in this case engage in interesting debates about statutory interpretation that should be intriguing to even those who are not excited about habeas law. Justice Scalia, in familiar fashion, chastised the majority for what he called was the majority's freewheeling purposivism. Justice Scalia also criticized his fellow justices for expanding what he believes is the court's previous creative interpretations of rigid procedural requirements in order to avoid undesirable results. And finally, the case's interesting federalism implications. AEDPA imposes a highly deferential standard for evaluating state court rulings and mandates respect for state court criminal processes. But in this case, the majority brushed aside Gonzalez's federalism argument. He argued that state law, not federal law, should determine when a state court decision became final, and a federal court should not intervene until the state courts have, from their own perspective, finished their work and disengaged from the case. But the majority rejected that interpretation and concluded that Gonzalez's reading of the statute would create state-by-state definitions of when direct review concluded and would make it very difficult for federal courts to administer habeas appeals. In other words, the need for uniformity trumped any federalism concerns, despite AEDPA's respect for state law processes. It will be interesting to see what role Gonzalez versus Thaler plays in future federalism debates, both within and outside the AEDPA context.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.